Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Well, the Goodman Theater has another great show coming up. It's The Little Foxes. And I decided to interview one of the main characters in the play, who has been an actor that's well-known in Chicago, who has been around for many years and done many great things. Say hello to Steve Pickering.
Hello. Steve Pickering.
Steve Pickering.
Hello, yes.
Okay.
The Little Foxes by Lillian Hellman.
Lillian Hellman. Yeah. Tell us about the play, because now when this gets mounted, when people first listen to it,
sure.
The show will not have started.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to get people to come out and see it.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll be in previews? Is that what?
Probably.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, the Little Foxes is kind of it's sort of an old war horse of the American theater. I mean, it was written in 1939. It was very successful. She wrote a prequel called Another Part of the Forest.
I didn't know that.
That Patricia Neal started, who is from Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm from Tennessee. So
okay.
I'm very partial to Patricia Neal. But it's about the Hubbard family. They always sort of... The Hubbards always kind of remind me of the Snopes family and Faulkner in the Faulkner-Snopes trilogy.
Okay.
About this sort of group of cracker people who come in and kind of take over all the business in the area. And they have a sort of trajectory like that, where they sort of come from dirt poor people, get into trade, and then manage to work their way into control of the town in which they live. Like I say, it's an old war horse, but I think what the Goodman has always been good at, or I like to think so, I've worked on it a few times, is taking an American classic like that and taking a fresh look at it. Nothing's particularly, I mean, it's not set in Peru in 1952, but there
is the era? What's the era?
Oh, the era is 1900.
1900.
Yeah, okay. Mid Alabama,
okay.
Around the mid part of the state. What am I saying? Around the middle part of the state of Alabama. in the Hubbard house, which is a very sort of, they seem to be a very, very affluent family, but they've acquired that. I mean, the play is very much an indictment of capitalism. An indictment of what it does to people who are so cravenly capitalistic at the expense of their own souls.
But it's a comedy, too.
It is. Well, all great comedies have that kind of darkness.
Yeah, they do.
Darkness to them. But it's really a family relationship drama. I play Oscar Hubbard and my brother, Ben Hubbard, who Larry Yandell plays. And the other sibling is Regina Hubbard, who is Shannon Cochran plays. And it's a good part of the play is the jockeying between the three siblings and how they're going to have influence over this deal that Ben has engineered with the Marshall Company in Chicago. You have to invest certain amounts of money. And
sounds like a pyramid scheme.
You'll make millions. Well, whatever you're doing, okay. You're going to make the money off the backs of the poor people, which is the point of Regina's husband, who John Judd plays, who has been taken ill and is in John Hopkins Hospital. And part of the action of the play is him coming back to this situation. And will he invest his money in it, which will allow Regina great riches, or will he not? So I had never read the play. I had never seen it. But I have met so many people who have an experience with it, either from the Elizabeth Taylor version, which was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
70s or 80s.
Yeah, I think that's, I think, yeah, I think it is.
When Ms. Hubbard was still alive. And it's also my first Lillian Hellman play, which is fun. So I'm a huge Dashiell Hammett guy.
Yeah.
And I always, early on, I looked at the play and went, well, that's the best play Dash ever wrote. But I don't believe he wrote it. I think he helped her edit it, which is great.
It's probably a case in several of them.
Between the both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they did help one another.
Well, it just seems kind of interesting to me that as soon as she started writing, he stopped. So, and he just quit writing for the rest. But the rest of the time, her most prolific. I can't say that word. A professional actor here, folks. Don't try this at home. When she was writing the most, how about that? I think he served as her chief editor from all of the books that we've read. And what a wonderful one he was.
Somebody needs to do a major film about that.
They should.
I think there's been something.
There's been some TV films.
Yeah, but a major film.
I seem to remember.
Would you be available for that, you think?
For me, you know who I could play is his detective, the Continental Op, who doesn't have a name. Because he was a very lumpy fellow as well. And I, you know, as I reach my Ernest Borgnine years, that's good for me.
Okay.
You know, I like that. But he had, you know, the thing is, his detective stories, and especially the ones that feature the op, were these very tight little pot-boiling morality tales.
Mm-hmm. That, I've read a couple of them. You're right. Absolutely right.
Just like, and there's a, not a, there's an echo of that where you have this very pressurized situation. And it's very much about a skewed morality and how it sort of works in that. You know, we've had a lot of discussions about just the ethics of the character and the morality of the character. And I keep thinking of, I remember when the Coen brothers made Miller's Crossing, which was their Dash Hammett knockoff.
Mm-hmm.
John Polito, who is an actor I sort of favor, has that wonderful speech about ethics, you know, and he talks about ethics.
In The Little Foxes, would you say that's a play about ethics?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
How much do you think she was influenced by her lover?
Hammett?
Yeah.
Oh, I think a great deal.
Yeah.
Especially in writing. I think, because he was a pretty, for the time that he was writing, he was such an extraordinary and influential writer. You know, he enjoyed the good life and he enjoyed a drink or two. They both did.
Yeah.
That was a good part of their relationship. But I think his, of course, they both had a leftist take on life
and
politics, which is great, which I love personally. And it's, so I think a lot of the ways that The Little Foxes portrays American capitalism and craving capitalism and how you use the poor and what you ignore about the poor, about African Americans, about slavery, what you try to take advantage of, I think speaks to a lot of the morality and the ethics of that particular situation. We root for them.
We root for them.
We root for the sibling. We want her to win. Mm-hmm. But at what cost?
Yeah.
You know, after the fact, you have this aftertaste, which is like, wait a minute, if she wins, it's most likely will destroy that little town they live in. So
that makes, that almost makes the play current. I mean, we've got those situations going on a much larger scale now.
There hasn't a day that's gone by that Henry Wishkamper, who's directing, is a wonderful guy and a really good director. There's been a day that's gone by where you rediscover a line on the page. And that's what I mean by Goodman. Usually when we go to a classic like that, we don't redefine it, but suddenly there's times, and on this one every day, when lines just jump out of you as a that could have been written yesterday about our current situation.
How is he as a director, since he's a lot younger than most of the people in the cast?
He is, yeah. No, I think he does very well with that. You know, there's some old war horses in there. In the cast, there's a lot of guys. Well, I've known Larry and Shannon and John Judd for almost 25, 30 years now. I've never worked with any of them.
Is that right?
Yeah, which is great. And it's funny. The last interview you did was with Ernest Perry.
Yes. No, I didn't do it. But my associate did.
Yes. Is that right?
Yeah. But it was tremendous.
And Ernest and I, especially in the 90s, did a great, great many shows at the Goodman. We were lucky that way. But I believe I've done 7 shows with Ernest. but I've never spoken to him on stage. Because those
just the way the scenes went
in the 90s. Yeah. I mean, the cast was so big. It didn't seem like there was one that we did that was under 35 people.
Wow.
And I believe Winter's Tale, Frank Galati, directed by Winter's Tale, had 52, if I'm not mistaken.
The only one that has the budget for those now is Lyric Opera.
Yeah.
Like their Carousel has that many. Yeah.
But we have a good crew here. It's good. You know, we have, 10, 11 people, something like that. But yeah.
So what should audiences expect from the show?
Oh, I think it's lots of Sturm and Drang and good old Chicago snot slinging. I think that's good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I called my parents the other day. They're in their 80s and they're retired in Tennessee. And I said, I think you should come up and see this one. You'll like it. It's enough of a well-made play. It's three acts, you know, three short acts. I just think that it's very visceral. It's like a dogfight in three acts. It's like how they're going to, you know, at any given time, I'll describe it to my wife as like, well, it's a pack of lizards fighting. It's a pack of dogs fighting. She says foxes, but I always think of foxes as something relatively nimble, you know, she talks about biting teeth, but mine, I think of mastiffs. These guys just going. Perhaps that's just because my face is constructed like a mastiff. You never know. But I think it's just a really good, passionate drama. You know,
and it's timely.
Yeah, very much so. Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
You know, all the business deals are great. I tell any Faulkner fan is. They're going to, I think, have a great time when they come.
So, Faulkner, yeah.
Well, I'm a Faulkner guy.
Yeah.
So I look at it and all those archetypes, all those guys are there in twos and threes in between those.
So tell us about the humor. It's supposed to be funny. What type of humor?
Well, it's strange to me, Tom, because because of the way that I look, it's rare that I do light plays, ever.
Yeah, right. You know, you're always known
it's for always intense, you know, dark or kill. And it's like in this one, I say, oh, gosh, it's another wife-beating racist, you know, like you do. But that's been a part of my life, and thankfully so, you know, because I'm just one of those character guys who trends toward the dark. I think anything that's human is amusing to us. Any point where we see ourselves is funny, I guess, but more amusing. And you can look at these characters, and at any given time, it's somewhat jaw-dropping the way that they behave or what they would have, just how selfish.
But they show how vulnerable they are, too?
Or how selfish.
Selfish, okay.
Or just what they're willing to do in order to get what they want. And that's funny.
Sounds like Tea Party Republicans.
Very much so.
I had to throw.
Ditto. I agree. Okay. No, but there's. I think it's like, you know, all of us here in the States. It's we really, in the past 10 years, have had to reevaluate what capitalism is doing to us, what socialism, how socialism is defined, and what we're actually doing to the people around us, our families, and the people who. You know, where we might be in a position to depend on us.
What do you hope that audiences are going to take from the play? Besides entertainment.
Oh, I think they'll take a good time. I think they'll take a second look at maybe what's happening to us now. I mean, this is our number one issue. What politics is doing to us, and the definition of how we're going to go about remaining a capitalist society, but at the same time not become so insular and self-consumed that we just ignore everyone else around us. On the one hand, they're extraordinarily understandable people, but they're pretty understandable because they're so selfish.
And we We cheer for them at the beginning. We cheer for them, right?
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
like of the, all those, you know, what? Dallas, Dynasty, those people. We love to hate them. You know, we love to watch them in their little mechanizations. And we've loved it since Richard III, and we've loved it, you know. We enjoy those types of figures in the theater. We would hate them in real life. But in the theater, we really kind of, you know, we love to watch Kevin Spacey go through House of Games.
And yeah.
Watch, right. Oh, my God. The guy, I can't believe he just did that. This is great. I'm watching next week. You know, there's a real entertainment in watching completely morally bankrupt people go about their happy lives.
Particularly from a well-written play.
Sure.
With a team of all-star. Your cast is an all-star.
They are all-star, present company excluded.
Nah,
because I'm in black and white. But they all, they're wonderful people. It's all 30-year people. And Dan Waller, who plays my son's,
he's terrific.
Wonderful, yeah. And Ray Gray, who I had not met before.
Oh, she's come along. We've seen her grow up in the theater.
What, have you?
Yes.
Because I've been in and out.
No, no, we have.
10 years.
She's really come along.
She's terrific. Yeah. And I read a new play that she had just written, which is wonderful, too. She's got great potential.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, no, and she's nice. And, of course, Dexter, I've known for years and years. But everybody's really wonderful.
So it opens at the Goodman, at the main theater. At the Goodman, May 2nd, running through June 7th. I have a feeling it could be extended.
We'll see. Yeah. Oh, I don't think it can it? Yeah.
No, it can't.
Unfortunately, I head to Santa Cruz, California.
Okay.
So, to play Macbeth.
So, let's talk about your career.
My career.
I mean, has there any major theater in this country you haven't worked in?
The Guthrie.
Really?
I've never worked at the Guthrie.
That's it.
Which I would like to. And there's quite a few. You know, I'd like to do a show at BAM. What is true is that I had, when Robert took over in 1987, there were about 30 of us here who became a kind of rotating company. The Goodman's a director's company. Mm-hmm. Steppenwolf's an actor's company. But for the Goodman, there was never really an acting company, but there kind of was. People like me, Orrin Jones, Ernest Perry, you know, Bruce Norris, a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. And I set certain goals that I wanted to do. I moved from Tennessee to New York for a couple of years in the early 80s, and then I moved here in 1985. There were certain things that I wanted to do in the theater. I wanted to play Broadway. I wanted to play off-Broadway. I wanted to play the Delacorte out in Central Park, and I wanted to play London. And within 12 years, out of the Goodman, I was able to do all of those things.
That's fantastic.
And either shows that transferred from the Goodman or in shows from Goodman directors, Michael Maggio, Bob, you know, all of those things, which was great. But I never was the best student of all time. I'm more of an intuitive person, I guess you can probably tell. But the Goodman in the 90s was the best, you know, it's like Orson Welles used to say, a film studio was the greatest model train set a boy ever had. And for me, the Goodman back at the Art Institute, here now it's different for, because they have a younger generation of guys who are coming in and making their mark, which is great. And so I come back occasionally in old War Horse plays, which is fun. But again, you say career, and I say, well, that indicates a plan, which I don't know. It's tough to have a plan. I would have never thought that I would have been lucky enough to play the places that I have, you know.
And to do all the Shakespeare you did.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah.
You really enjoy Shakespeare.
I do. Yeah. It's fun. You know, there's Chekhov folks, and I haven't, that penny hasn't dropped for me yet.
You haven't done Chekhov?
I've done one Chekhov. Okay. I did The Seagull for Bob.
Okay.
And that was a marvelous experience and wonderful people. But he's not one of those, he's not one of those playwrights that I truly love. Shakespeare, I love. I especially Because of the parts that I get to play, which are great fun.
Give me an example of a couple you like.
Of what?
Of Shakespeare.
Which one I like?
Yeah, no, characters that you've played that you enjoyed.
Well, actually, I'm headed out to Santa Cruz, California this summer to play Macbeth for Kirsten Brandt out there, which is great. And then I'm playing Dogberry in Much Ado for Laura Gordon, which I think would be a lot of fun, too, who's a friend from Milwaukee Rep and directs and acts. She's a wonderful person. I did a Coriolanus years ago with Deanna Dunnigan for Eric Simonson up at the Old Next. At the big bath for.
Let's talk about the Old Next for. You have a big.
I have fun at the.
You Next. Had fun. You were artistic director there, right?
I was artistic director from 1993 to 1998, I believe. Yeah, that's right. Because we left. I left artistic director when we took Death for Salesman here to New York for a year, and then Kate Buckley took over for me. Harriet Spezieri hired me as. The next artistic director. And we really, when we started, we really didn't have much of anything except the structure. And I looked at my partner, this guy named Peter Reibold, and I said, well, that just means we do what we want, right? He went, sure, just go ahead. So we had a great, great time, you know. And
did, you did some cutting edge stuff up
Clyde
there.
Clyde Barker and science fiction shows. The first show, Dexter Bullard was just great to me when I was, yeah. My first show was in the Next Lab, where that was, which was Dexter's baby, and they did wonderful stuff there. But the first one we did was an all-female version of The Hunting of the Snark by Lewis Carroll, and we cut up a 54 Chevrolet and rebuilt it back in that classroom. And then they performed it on, you can hide 9 women in a 54 Chevrolet. You know? No. Not seeing through the window. It's such a big car.
Oh, wow.
But, and we sort of went from there. We did, you know, our Clive Barker shows with Charlie Sherman, mm-hmm. and science fiction. We did Bill Gibson. And, great people. It was a lot of fun. And
it's a shame that it did.
It is a shame. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's really difficult. Now, you couldn't. Now, in the current economy, you couldn't be the kind of artistic director that I was.
Yeah, you'd need to do shows that make money, right?
Yeah, you really, you know, 75-80% of your job now as artistic director is fundraising. And that was not the case when I was doing it. It was, you know, 60-40. I'd say 60 was art, 40% was fundraising. Guys who do it really well and better than I did, certainly like Sean Graney and guys like that, they have, you know, that bright sort of twisted attitude that really helps them to both survive the fundraising aspect of it, but also do inspired, memorable.
Yeah, work, yeah. You know, that's a tough balance, isn't it?
It's really hard. Yeah. It's really hard. You know, Nate Allen does a really good job with that, but in a different way than Sean does. Mm-hmm. And Nathan and all of his guys have a sort of, as you know, a natural showmanship, you know, about what they do.
Oh, yeah. And they brought in a young audience, too.
Oh, they did. Yeah.
And they're still with them.
Yeah. So there's ways around it. But it would be tough. And I can, you know, you look at the Next and you look at what happened to the Next. And a part of it is City of Evanston. That theater, because the City of Evanston has an investment in other arts organizations that they pay a bit more attention to. The Next never really got, you know, as fair of a shape from the City of Evanston as they might. But at the same time, I understand why they have those.
Well, that's, you know, the whole story hasn't come out.
Yeah.
I mean, why there's no landlord lets you get $78,000 in debt. Well, something has to happen. But let's hope we can get something back in that space.
They forgave, you know, they forgave net debt along the way. They forgave rent along the way. I don't know if they, I, You know, I can't remember if they did it for us like a couple of times, but we
but you brought money into Evanston, yes.
Yeah, we did. We had a good trajectory. I mean, when we started, we were non-equity. We had I think I did Old Man the Sea for like $600-700 in total.
Wow. Yeah.
And by the end of the year, we were equity again. You know, so it all goes in cycles. Now, Loweth was a wonderful.
Yes, yes. I got to know him.
But see, Jason does accounting for fun. Jason's one of those guys.
There's like three in the world.
Yeah. He's having great success out in Baltimore with the Onley Theater Company.
Yeah, so I understand. Because
the past 2 years I've been at, for half years, half of the year in 2013, half in 14, I've been at Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. working for Michael Kahn, which was great. And and my wife went out the last time and played Doll Tearsheet.
Tell us who your wife is.
My wife is Maggie Kettering.
Oh, yeah.
And she was just in Season on the Line over at the House Theater, mm-hmm. actually. Played the stage manager. And she's going up to Peninsula Players this summer to do Outside Mullingar. And
that's an awesome play, huh?
It is a good play. I really enjoyed the production with Kate.
Yeah.
And Bill Norris.
I mean, that's as good as it. Yeah. And Montgomery, too. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Mark Montgomery. Yeah. Yeah. And Annabelle Arbor. Yeah. I thought BJ did a great job of that. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And so your wife's going to do that, huh?
She is. She's going to play Kate's part. She's going to borrow Kate's part for a while.
That's a challenge.
Yeah, do that. And then she's doing Lend Me a Tenor. So she's going to be falling all over furniture, you know, for a while, like you do.
Yeah. That's cool.
Which will be fun. But so she's looking forward to that. And then we did, for Michael, we did Henry IV, 1 and 2 with Stacy Keach's Falstaff, mm-hmm. who was our King Lear here.
Yeah.
Which we had a great time with.
Yeah, that was one of the fun moments. Yeah.
That was a play. You talk about plays that are, you know, can't be serious, but at the same time, funny. That was one.
Yes.
There were a lot of laughs in King Lear.
Yeah.
And that was.
And some people didn't get that.
No.
Yeah, but.
Well, it's all right.
It's there, yeah.
You know, that's. I don't know. You try your best sometimes, you know, people like it. But I'd have to say that King Lear was probably the. Not my personal favorite show here, but I think the best one we did.
Okay.
I mean, I've done over 30. Which is great.
Here?
Yeah. At Goodman. But
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot.
Then I'm a little overdue. I should have done this interview a few years back. No?
No, I'm fine.
Oh, okay.
Doing what I do. This is nice. It's a treatment.
Well, let me ask you a couple of standard questions that I like to ask everybody.
Sure.
One is, what are some of the roles you're proudest of in your career? I guess your favorite, you could say.
Walter Burns in The Front Page, we did up at Next, who was directed by Sarah Tucker. That was, I want to say, 94 or 95. At a great time.
It's a great play, huh?
Yeah, and just the speed of it and that cast. You know, a lot of times, my memories don't necessarily go to particular parts as they do a group of people. And I think you find that more often the case.
Yeah, I'm finding it out. The more veteran actors I interview, the more I hear that.
It's like, this was a great time mm-hmm. because it was a great group of people. You mentioned the show for Pine Box, Josh Rollins' play,
yeah, that was
Girl with Sun in Her Eyes. What a great group of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot of fun. You know, it was Karen Aldridge and Vince Tenendi and Audrey Francis, and everybody was terrific. There was a show that Bob directed called On the Open Road at the Old Goodman that I did with a man named Jordan Charney and Christoph Paczynski. That was my own private little Kurosawa movie. It was just great. Okay. It was this post-apocalyptic landscape. And it was very much a Well, Robert would say, it's a Dostoevsky novel. And they go, yeah, well, it's a Kurosawa movie to me. That's okay. that was a life changer for me.
Okay.
You know, one of those where it's like the part, the process of it, the set, it was a George Siepen set, railroad tracks that would go up. We were crucified for the last 20 minutes of the play.
Wow.
It was great fun. It was like action theater. But at the same time, it was just with one other guy, you know, essentially. There were a couple of characters we come out, but marvelous.
So in the interest of time, let me ask you the other sure. standard question. What are a couple of the roles that you're dying to play that you haven't played?
You know, I don't have any. I don't have any. Oscar's a fun guy to play.
Yeah.
But there's not one. You know, I did Kent for Lear in Bob's Lear with Stacy, and I came out the other side and went, I might like to play that later.
Okay,
but I didn't go, oh, I have to play that. I think it's more. Again, I'm sorry to disappoint you on this. I think it's for me. I always go, I want to work with those people.
Okay.
I'd like
so it's to more of who the ensemble is.
It really is.
Okay.
It really is.
I've heard that before. That's,
I mean,
because you guys feed off one another, right?
Well, yeah. Well, that's all, yeah.
Yeah.
It's your little roving family.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but I played Mercutio and had a lovely time with that because the people were lovely. You know, the whole experience of it, the Maggio experience. Which is great, the Little Italy in Chicago experience. You know, it was terrific. And that was Mike Cerveris was Romeo and Phoebe Cates was Juliet.
Last question. You know, and I'll need a fairly short answer.
Sure, sorry.
What advice would you give young actors? Those that want to make a career of it?
Don't do it.
Really?
Yeah. If you take that advice, then you don't need to be doing it. But if you don't take that advice and you continue on, then you probably survive. But that's, you know, young people, we all have an animal that lives inside of us. Actors, performers, people who need to get in front of an audience and do this. You know if you have that or not. But there's a lot of different occupations that you can do or commit your life to while you do that. But I don't think I'd ever recommend to a young person to actually
but they, if,
do
they have to have it. They have to know if they have it, right?
They have to have it. I mean, you know.
If they have it, then they have to do it, don't they?
Oh, yeah. That's the point.
Yeah.
If they have to do it, then they're not going to listen to a knucklehead like me anyway. I mean, seriously, let them, you know. It's like if you have to do it, you go ahead and do it. You find clowns like me and we'll help you. But if I'm going to give you, if I'm going to stand back and presume to give somebody advice, no, I wouldn't. I'd say, well, here's the advice that I would give. At any given time, 98% of the members of my union are unemployed.
Yeah,
you
got to be able to handle rejection.
You can't, in good conscience, look at a young person and say, you need to do this for your livelihood. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll help you do this for your livelihood. Absolutely. Support you 100%. But to advise you to do it, no. If you have to do it, let's go.
Thank you for the honesty.
Sure.
And
no problem.
You're obviously having fun with Little Foxes.
Oh, we're having a great time. Yeah, that's
good. Well, folks, you got to come see this play. It's got all the elements from the Goodman, top actors, good writing, and I can't wait to see it.
Oh.
It opens May 2nd, and it runs through June 7th here in Chicago. Thank you.
Thanks
for listening, folks, and go see a play this week.